World News Today, brought to you by Continental Radio and Television Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set. By shortwave broadcast, direct from important overseas stations, as well as the leading news centers of our own country, CBS correspondents are waiting to bring you a complete report from the world's political and battlefronts. But first, here's Doug Edwards.
The North African land front is quiet, but Allied planes are hurling death and destruction on the Axis over a wide area of the Mediterranean. American Lieutenant General Spots reports that his Allied Air Force commands the skies in that battle zone. The Russians are increasing their air attacks on the eastern end of the Axis European fortress, and our own flyers have again bombed Jap targets in the North and South Pacific. Now, for our first overseas report, Admiral Radio takes you direct to CBS Algiers, Charles Collingwood reporting.
This is Charles Collingwood at Allied Force Headquarters in North Africa. There's a lot of air activity going on over what's left of the Tunisian front, but not much else. This is not yet the time for large-scale ground sighting. While the land forces were patrolling the 130 miles of African front yesterday, flying fortresses were going to Palermo and Ferryville, and the medium and light bombers were ceaselessly attacking enemy communications. They with tankers and transports and dry dock and drills and trucks and all of the targets which an air force at the peak of its performance goes after and hits. The story of yesterday's air war sounds very much like the story of any day in the last couple of weeks. Ships and roads and dry docks and a day's score in our favor, 29-8. It's all so much like yesterday or the day before that it's almost boring. But that's the stuff that air superiority is made of, and that's what you get air superiority for, so that every day you can go out and sink the enemy ships and bomb his roads and strap his troops. That's what a good air force does, and what this air force in North Africa is doing now. While there is this period of quiet at the front, it might be well to say a word or two about what's going on behind the front. A man I know has just come over from America. He says he was surprised at what he found here. He says he thought all the political difficulties were over. It surprised him to find that they weren't. Well, of course they aren't, although it sometimes seems that they are. The politics of North Africa now are so much less deadly. No one goes around murdering other people or plotting revolutions or trying to seize power. But there still are a lot of people here who want power. Not power here in North Africa, but in France. And that makes the politics that are going on now. Considerably more scrupulous politics. People talk about the Constitution now and the law of 1870 this and 1870 that. But it is still politics, and it is still true that what is happening here today is going to decide what will happen in France tomorrow. For instance, General Kutru is due back from London almost any day now, and he may have something to add on the matter of a Giraud de Gaulle agreement. But this is all just conversation now. The sort of thing people say over a dinner table. Because if anything is sure, it is that all this sort of thing is waiting on the settlement of the military problem. The big thing in North Africa right now is to get the Germans out of here. Everything is waiting on that. Other operations, politics, civilian relief, all the rest of it. But right now, it's the final push that everyone is waiting for. It's going to be a rough, dirty business. With lots of casualties. But that's the way it's got to be. This is Charles Collingwood returning you to New York.
More news in just a moment. But first, here's Warren Sweeney with a word from Admiral Radio.
Heat generated by the tubes of a radio makes ventilation imperative. Here's a problem which Admiral engineers faced when Admiral began building radio and electronic equipment for the Army. Radios built for use in the home can be ventilated without considering the question of dust. But radios installed in tanks, jeeps, and scout cars are exposed to clouds of dirt, sandstorms on the desert, all sorts of abrasive particles that could ruin the set's efficiency within a very few minutes. A new means of ventilation had to be found for these radios, one which would keep dust out but allow air to circulate freely. It had to be found at once, not sometime in the future, and it was. Bricks of spun glass now seal the Admiral-built radio and electronic devices which may be subjected to dust, sand, or dirt. There are many problems Admiral is solving. Most of them, along with their solutions, are military secrets. But this one will serve to demonstrate how Admiral, in meeting the almost impossible requirements of war, is condensing years of research into the space of months and weeks. Many of these truly remarkable developments, now being made in producing vital communications equipment for our armed forces, will be found in the post-war radio for all of us to enjoy. More than ever, the Admiral radio of the future will be America's smart set. Now, here once again for Admiral Radio is Doug Edwards.
For developments in the Pacific War Zone, Admiral Radio takes you after a brief pause to CBS Australia, George Murad reporting.
After nearly 4 years of war, Australia came this week to creation of a Food Control Board, or executive. It will handle all domestic and overseas aspects of production, control, and distribution in this great food-producing country. In naming one of his outstanding ministers to the post of controller, Prime Minister Curtin said that meat, for example, will be under government authority from the hoof to the family dinner table. It was also hinted that butter and other staple foodstuffs might be rationed soon. It is well known, of course, that during the dark days of 1939 and 40, Australian meat, butter, and eggs literally kept England and some of the colonies alive. Australia did this quite easily, with no noticeable effect on the domestic supply. But now this nation and New Zealand are charged with feeding all Allied troops in the South and Southwest Pacific. Some idea of the amount of food this involves may be gained by the recent Washington announcement that Lend-Lease to America from Australia is larger than our contribution to this country. And it takes a lot of butter and eggs to offset the cost of embalming, for instance. It is one of the ironies of war. The greatest food-producing countries, America and Australia, have found themselves much less able to figure out food control than other countries such as England, which previously were largely dependent on imports. Here, as in America, much productive time has been lost, and it is hoped now to correct this by a careful system of surveys, production quotas, and inevitably more rationing. The Australian Board will work closely with similar organizations already functioning in New Zealand, Washington, and London. All of this control, this new pinch on the civilians, means that the American doughboy will continue to enjoy what is probably the best diet provided in any theater of war. They eat so well, in fact, that their worries are only of the folks back home. One of my officer friends reluctantly avoids his weekly 1 pound of fat and sends it back to his wife, California. This is George L. Murad in Australia. I return you to CBS.
This is San Francisco. You have just heard a report direct from Australia. And now for analysis of recent events and possible developments in the Pacific Theater, here is William Winter of CBS World News.
Several weeks ago, Secretary Knox said the Pacific was in a state of suspended animation. Today it appears there is less suspension and more animation. The animation is of two kinds, verbal and military. Militarily, there is evidence of increased Japanese air activity in the Southwest Pacific, countered by increased Allied air activity. General Kenney said the other day that the Allies were outnumbered in the air. In point of performance, however, it appears that Allied air power has maintained consistent superiority. This may be due primarily to the superior ability of American pilots and gunners. The Japanese have been concentrating air and ground forces in various islands west of New Guinea and northwest of Australia. From this area, the enemy's in a position to move against Darwin and Cape Talbot in northwest Australia. However, there would be little of immediate strategic value for Japan to gain in northwest Australia since it's largely desert country. It's possible, then, that Japanese concentrations there may be intended as diversionary to distract Allied attention. The Allies, meanwhile, have been building up positions northeast of Australia, that is, on this side, or the east side of New Guinea, in the New Guinea Peninsula of Papua and in the Solomons. An Allied offensive would clearly threaten the Japanese naval and air base of Rabaul, which is about 700 miles northwest of Guadalcanal and about 450 miles or so northeast of Buna. Due north of Rabaul is the major Japanese naval base of Truk, from which the Japanese Navy has apparently been operating in the Southwest Pacific lately. If the Allies neutralize Rabaul and eventually Truk, Japan would lose her main naval base in the Southwest Pacific. Without adequate bases, of course, a fleet cannot operate successfully. On the other hand, the Japanese are in a position possibly to move to the east. Japanese leaders have often expressed their intention to cut the lifeline between the United States and Australia. They made one effort in that direction last June when they tried an invasion of Hawaii, but were defeated in the battle off Midway. Recently, there was a Japanese air attack on the island of Canton. Not much damage was done, but the attack may be indicative of how the Japanese mind is working these days. Canton is one of the islands in the U.S.-Australian communications route, about 1,000 miles south of Hawaii and only about 800 miles east of Japanese bases in the Gilbert Islands. There's been much verbal animation concerning the Southwest Pacific. Official statements have been encouraging. President Roosevelt, after the Casablanca conference, revealed strategic plans for offensive action in the Pacific. Secretary Stimson announced more planes are being sent to the South Pacific. Dr. Herbert Evatt, Australia's envoy to Washington, after a conference at the White House the other day, predicted good news for our side and bad news for Japan before his mission to Washington is ended. What is not known is how long Dr. Evatt plans to remain in Washington. This is William Winter in San Francisco, returning you now to CBS in New York and Doug Edwards.
In Russia, the Red Army has again thrown back Nazi counterattacks in the Caucasus. For this news and other developments, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Moscow. Bill Downs reporting.
One of the best-known women in Moscow today is a lady called Gamelton. She's the favorite topic of conversation in the subways and on the street corners or anywhere you find a group of Russians gathered. It took me several days to discover that when Moscow speaks of Lady Gamelton, they were talking about the lady friend of Britain's famous Lord Nelson, Lady Hamilton. Last week, the motion picture Lady Hamilton opened in Moscow theaters and immediately took the town by storm. It's a mystery to the correspondent here why the ordinary Soviet citizen should take such an avid interest in the last century doings of a woman they never heard of before. But no one here has ever figured out why a none-too-good Hollywood musical and comedy film called The Three Musketeers has been running steadily at some theater in Moscow for over 6 months. Moscow theater goers like American films of any kind. There's an old Lawrence Tibbett film whose Hollywood title I've forgotten, but in Russia it's called Thrilled by You. It's been running over a year and is still doing a big business in the neighborhood theaters. And in the suburban theaters for the past 2 years have been showing the Deanna Durbin film 100 Men and a Girl. These American films are the closest link that the people of the United States have with the Russian people. Sometimes it's a little horrifying.
We regret that atmospheric conditions prevent our bringing you further that report from Moscow. Across the Atlantic, British fighter planes and light bombers continued the offensive against the European continent last night. For the latest developments in this war zone, Admiral Radio takes you now to CBS London, Paul Manning reporting.
Stafford Cripps spoke in Bristol this afternoon. It was the usual Sunday speech of a government leader who travels from London to a smaller city and then addresses a university audience. They were interested in post-war planning, in the feeding of Europe, and the men they would elect to Parliament after the war. But Sir Stafford Cripps pointed out, the war must first be won. The hardest fighting lies ahead in Tunisia, and after that comes the invasion of Europe, which will be a hard, difficult job, but not an impossible assignment. Cripps reiterated Churchill's statement that in the Atlantic we are doing only slightly better than holding our own. This touch of realism you find in every speech made these days by British statesmen. They want no one in Britain to forget that only hard work will win this war. But that's not easy to forget in these islands. Everyone is so close to the war here. If you live along the coast, you see British and German airplanes fighting overhead. Today, fighter planes of the Royal Air Force made sweeps across the Channel into France. During one thrust, a British formation was met by German squadrons. In the ensuing dogfight, both sides lost a plane each. And if you live inland, next to, say, a military target, sometimes you get bombed. There have been few bombs lately, of course, but the impact of the war is always there. It seems that so many families in England have lost some member, either by a bullet or by capture. I know well an elderly housekeeper who writes daily to her son, a prisoner of war in Germany. When British prisoners were being manacled last October, she inquired of me if I thought this was true. What could I say? I replied that it might be, but it probably sounded much worse than it was. Maybe the Germans were only using light string, and sort of, as sort of a political gesture. She felt better after that. And the Americans who are close to the U.S. Air Force here, they never forget the war either. Many of the finest boys in America are here doing battle nearly every day for their country. They go out over Bremen and Vegasac, San Nazaire and Brest. Most of the time they all come back, but sometimes they don't. It's hardest of all to forget that. I return you now to CBS New York and Doug Edwards.
In this country, Democratic and Republican congressmen are nearing agreement on a new tax bill. And as we said before, the Navy has reported new action against the enemy in the North and South Pacific. For details, Admiral Radio takes you to CBS Washington, Bill Costello reporting.
Administration leaders have dropped the deliberate and indeed almost casual manner in which they were handling the tax collection problem. There was a hasty and informal Sunday meeting this morning of key members of the House Ways and Means Committee, and it is generally believed that a new bill will be reported and passed this week, embodying both a withholding tax and at least partial cancellation of 1942 income levies. This sudden disposition to compromise, almost to the point of surrender, is being viewed here against a background of developments in the 78th Congress. The record shows Congress is not satisfied that the executive branch has done everything possible to regulate prices, rationing, wages, and manpower. There are now pending at least six major pieces of legislation dealing with these subjects. The Pace and Bankhead bills to raise farm prices, the Kilday bill, and the Austin Wadsworth National Service Act to revise the draft on both the civil and military fronts, and proposals for a civilian supply agency, and the Truman Committee recommendations for extensive changes in the war administrative agencies. Congress has shown by the recent passage of the salary ceiling repealer and the abandonment of the Currency Devaluation Act that it will not hesitate to wipe out the president's discretionary powers, and that it has both the strength and the determination to replace them with definite statutory provisions if necessary. Besides this legislative pressure, the minority party is making skillful use of political pressure. And the Democratic side of the House, in rejecting new tax proposals, has suddenly waked up to find itself for the first time in many years on the unpopular side of an issue. The combination of all these pressures has brought forth in recent days a series of administrative orders designed to appease congressional critics. There was the president's hold-the-line order, the appointment of Chester Davis as food director, a new draft policy, and then last night's order virtually freezing all war workers in their present jobs. Now it appears that the political high command has decided it must yield some ground on the tax issue or face the threat of a major revolt. Committee members after this morning's meeting merely said they had reached no decision, but were hopeful and would confer again tomorrow with the Speaker and other leaders of both parties. A Navy communique this afternoon tells of a new series of damaging raids against the Japanese. 10 attacks were carried out Thursday against the enemy base at Kiska, and another heavy bombers raided Attu Island as part of the plan to blunt the Japanese spearhead aimed at Alaska. In the Solomons, 3 enemy bombers and 3 fighter planes were shot out of the sky, with a loss of 1 American fighter. And 2 enemy ships were possibly damaged in a raid on the Shortland Island area. Some damage and casualties are reported on Guadalcanal, which was attacked by 2 Japanese planes Thursday night. The Agriculture Department reports today that farmers will probably increase their production of food only 3% instead of the 7% which had been called for. As a result, it is estimated that civilians will get slightly less than expected unless the weather is better than usual. For example, there will probably be only 124 pounds of meat per person this year instead of 138, about 10% less. More food will be produced, but more will be needed for all purposes, and the average consumer may plan for a reducing diet. Now back to CBS New York and Doug Edwards.
Here in our New York studio is Columbia's military analyst, Major George Fielding Elliott.
This is what the Tunisian situation looks like at the moment. Though suffering heavy losses in prisoners and material, Marshal Rommel has succeeded in temporarily stabilizing a front which now forms the left flank of a semicircle of German defenses covering the approaches to Tunis and Bizerte. The right flank of this semicircle rests on the Mediterranean. The left flank, where Rommel holds it, rests on the Gulf of Gabas. This part of the German front is the weakest from the point of view of terrain, that is, this left flank. And it is here that the Germans are confronted by the strongest Allied force, the British Eighth Army. Hence, we may expect the next Allied advance to come in this sector. The American troops will probably move up on the left of the Eighth Army, and with some of the French, will take care of the center of the Allied line. And the British First Army, and more French, will be still farther on the left, next to the Mediterranean. The Allied armies are superior in numbers, material, and in freedom of action. They have the initiative. They have great depth for their air power. They have room to maneuver. They can effect surprise within reasonable limits at any point. But their greatest advantage is undoubtedly their complete air superiority. The Axis now has only some 12 or 15 airfields in Africa. These must not only take care of all air transport operations, they must take care also of the fighter squadrons protecting the transport planes, and of such dive bombers as the enemy may wish to use. Neither fighters nor dive bombers can be operated efficiently over Africa from Sicilian or Sardinian bases. The distances are too great. These Axis airfields are now the targets for almost continuous attack by the planes of Major General Doolittle's Strategic Air Force. Meanwhile, offshore, Allied planes vie with Allied surface warships and submarines in the destruction of Axis shipping. Though it is interesting to note that the Axis keeps up determined, if almost hopeless, efforts to get at least a few ships across to their beleaguered troops in Africa.
Today's war news from Moscow centers on increasing activity by the Russian Air Force. Red Army planes are stepping up their attacks upon East Prussia and on German airfields, communications, and troop concentrations. Meyer has bogged down most land fighting, except in the Kuban Delta on the approaches to Novorossiysk. In Hamilton, Bermuda, the British-American Refugee Conference gets underway tomorrow, and it's expected that shipping and immigration handicaps in the rescue of thousands of additional refugees from Nazi oppression in Europe will be among the foremost problems facing the delegates. Now, once again, here is Warren Sweeney with a word from our sponsor.
An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. That proverb might have been written especially for radio set owners, since most radio troubles can be prevented if proper precautions are taken. The ounce of prevention many Americans use is the regular twice-a-year checkup given by Admiral dealers. These checkups are made according to a procedure suggested by Admiral engineers and research technicians, a step-by-step examination which enables your Admiral dealer to locate all possible weaknesses in your radio. For instance, does your set have an annoying hum? Well, this may be the result of a circuit made defective by a faulty tube or condenser. If an Admiral dealer finds such trouble spots as he makes his regular checkup, he can correct them quickly before real harm is done. If he sees some vital part which will need a replacement in the near future, he'll order a new one immediately and, in spite of shortages, probably have it in time to keep your set in continuous operation. Only a nominal charge is made for this service. So be sure your radio lasts for the duration. Call your Admiral dealer. Ask him to check your set twice a year regularly. Your Admiral dealer is backed by the entire Admiral organization. In peacetime, the world's largest manufacturer of radio phonograph combinations with automatic record changers. If you want action against our enemies, buy war bonds. Buy at least one extra war bond every week for the next 3 weeks. Uncle Sam has got to raise $13 billion in 21 days. It must come from the pocketbooks of America. So let's go, America. An extra war bond every week for 3 weeks. We want action, and money does it. World News Today is brought to you each Sunday at this hour by Continental Radio and Television Corporation, makers of Admiral Radio, America's smart set. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The WBBM Air Theater, Wrigley Building, Chicago.